Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, May 29th. On Monday, most of you have heard this, a white woman made a racially charged 911 call on a black male bird watcher in Central Park after he asked her to leash her dog. In what has now become an infamous viral video taken by the bird watcher, the woman says, "I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life." Now a new bill proposed in the New York State Senate would add the false reporting of a crime to a list of charges eligible for hate crime status. Joining me now is Brian Benjamin, co-sponsor of that bill, New York State Senator, who represents Harlem, East Harlem, Upper West Side, Washington Heights, Hamilton Heights, Morningside Heights. That's the 30th State Senate District, for those of you keeping score. Welcome back to WNYC, Senator Benjamin. Thank you for coming on with us today.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
And let's start on the bill, per se. It would make it a hate crime to call the police on a black person when no crime had occurred. How would that be determined, and what do you think the punishment should be?
So the way it would be determined, it would be in the court of law. And, you know, that's important because I think one of the key issues that we're dealing with here, Brian, you know, I think it's important to take a step back, because I've been receiving a lot of comments about this bill. You know, Christian Cooper represents, for some people, the essence of our problem, right? So he's someone who played by the rules, worked hard, went to the right schools. If you look at the video, his restraint is unparalleled in anything I've seen someone in a situation like that. Did all the right things, had a video on, and she still weaponizes race against him by calling 911 and using that very stark language. And so I think it's important to understand that it is really demoralizing to know that someone who's a bird watcher, who's playing by the rules, doing all the right things, can still be subject to something like this. So I just want to crystallize that for you, because there's so much emotion behind that. You know, sometimes people say, well, you know, folks out there, they've been making bad decisions, and that's why they're dealing with racist activity, or that's why the cops are harassing them, et cetera. But you have a situation like this, it calls that all into question, and it reminds people of this concern that whenever a black mother sends her son out, she is petrified. My mom is always calling me, Brian, be safe, be safe. I'm like, oh, mom, don't worry. I'm a senator. I'm good, mom. I dress well. I do this. Calm down, calm down. And mm-hmm. She's always concerned. Why? Because of situations like this. So I just want to kind of put that context out there. Now, as it relates to the bill, right now in the state of New York, if you falsely report an incident, you can be charged for that, right? So either a first, second, or third degree.
And it's already a crime, frankly, to falsely report any incident.
It's already a crime. And quite frankly, the police could have arrested her because, in the given the statute, as I look at it, as lawyers have told me, she could have been penalized as a class for a class 8 misdemeanor, right? Now, what this bill does is say, it's one thing to falsely report an incident. It's another thing to have race, ethnicity, gender as the reason for the false reporting, or is used as part of the false reporting. And so therefore, we think that should be a specified offense that can have a higher penalty, which is typically a penalty higher than the one that is charged in the statute of the existing law.
How would you put this incident for yourself in the context of the grief and anger that so many people are experiencing in this country, grief and anger over the 100,000th American death from COVID-19 this week, amid the failures that have contributed to that, and grief and anger over George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, this incident in Central Park, Ahmaud Arbery, all going on at the same time, Where would you like to start with your own reactions in as broad a context as you want?
Brian, I mean, where do I start? Let me say, you know, let's talk about George Floyd, because, you know, this is the problem. As far as I know, a nonviolent offense, this is not someone who had a weapon. There was no threat that he was posing to the officers from any evidence anyone has shown. Yet somehow he gets, you know, a knee on his neck for 8 minutes. How does he get a knee on his neck for 8 minutes? And then you see videos across the country of whites being aggressive, swinging machetes at cops, and somehow that gets resolved extremely peacefully.
You mean those reopening protests?
There's reopening protests, and just in general. I mean, Twitter and social media is an amazing thing. What you see hostility that's happening across all races towards police at different times, yet you only see black and brown people being handled aggressively. But then, moreover, you see scenarios where whites could be actually having a weapon that they're swinging at an officer, but somehow that gets handled peacefully. It's just hard to reconcile this. And you know, as someone who, quite frankly, has spent my life playing by the rules, doing all the right things, trying to be a good citizen, it is enormously frustrating to see over and over and over and over and over again how things get resolved. And then, quite frankly, it's hard to imagine a scenario where the DA in Hennepin County can legitimately say that these police should not be charged. I mean, for sure, the police officer who had his knee on the neck of Floyd should without question be charged for murder. I don't even know how you even consider that to not be possible. So that has to get resolved. But you know, it's just hard. It's like you constantly are just hoping for a better America, but quite frankly, you know, I have a young daughter. Everyone's raising children. You're scared. And if I had a young son, I'd just be terrified. I don't even know what I would do. It is incumbent upon myself and all of us who are legislators and people with a voice who have authority to do everything we can to force a better system in our country. And unless we do that, and unless people see us doing that and being very and making this a priority, we're going to continue to have some of the issues that we're seeing in Minneapolis, but also more importantly, this continued microaggression tensions will continue and govern so much of how we interact with each other, because we're not dealing with the core issues and we're not creating a level playing field and a system of fairness for everybody. That has got to be at the core of this, right? How do we create fairness for everybody, particularly in our criminal justice system? And until we do that, we're gonna continue to have problems. So I'm focused on doing that. And quite frankly, I am not someone who looks to say I like to have more criminal penalties. I'm not someone who I actually believe we over-incarcerate as needed for public safety. But mm-hmm. What I also believe is that if someone is going to use race as a weapon when it comes to falsely reporting incidents to the police, that for certain there needs to be an added penalty on that, because that has taken us in a direction that, as I said before, to me feels like terrorist behavior. So, for example, if you say that I'm an N-word, I think that's racist. If you call the police with race as the weaponizing factor to come and take my liberty, that to me approaches terrorism. And so I think it's important to be clear about that fact, because I think some people say, oh, she was just, you know, she was a racist, she made a couple comments. That's when you call the police and you say to the police that this African-American man is threatening my life, that is not just racism. That, to me, is terrorism, and we have to call it for what that is, and we have to make sure that people know that is absolutely not okay.
And it puts the person's life in danger, because we know what a police response can be. We know from these other incidents we're talking about what biased police response can be even, you know, unintentional bias. And
absolutely.
So when you say somebody's threatening your life, police might come with guns drawn. And
absolutely.
Then they might misperceive
and
the situation. Go ahead.
But one more thing, because one of the things that I had people say to me, oh, well, you know, these Trump supporters. Let's be very clear. From her personal donation records, this woman supported Barack Obama. She supported Pete Buttigieg. She's a Democrat. So, and she lives in Manhattan. So one of the things that we have got to be clear about, this is not a Southern issue. This is not a, oh, these are Trump supporter MAGA hat issues. This is an issue across the board, and we can't sweep it under the rug. We've got to deal with it head on, and we can't like kind of paper it over like, oh, if only, you know, we did this or we did that. There are some real deep inherent issues that we have to address across the board, and everyone has to look at themselves. We all do, Brian. We have to look at ourselves and say, what are we thinking? What are our views on each other? How do we treat each other? What gave this woman the thought that she could, while someone's taping her, knowingly state on the phone to 911 that this person is threatening my life? How does the brain process that? There is something deeply embedded in how she sees the world that allowed her to do that. And that is what is so scary to so many people, and that's what we have to address.
And Mike in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Senator Brian Benjamin. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mr. Lear. Hi, Senator.
Hi.
I'm African-American, and I'm 35 years old, and what happened to Mr. Cooper in the park has happened to me throughout my whole entire life. Like Mr. Cooper, I always did the right thing. I served in the United States military. I went and got my education. I worked for a living, and yet and still, no matter what space I walk in, I'm treated as different. Unlike our white brothers and sisters out there, I don't feel protected by police. I'm scared when I see NYPD because I don't feel as though they're there to protect me. I think that police looked at me as if I'm already guilty of a crime I have not committed. And when I saw the video of the woman threatening to call the cops on an African-American man who threatened her life, I just viewed that as a death threat, nothing more. And the killing of Mr. Floyd out in Minneapolis, it was sickening, but at the same time, it was not surprising. This have gone on my whole entire life. I, myself, when I was 12 years old, I had a gun pulled out on me by a cop, threatening to shoot me in my head if I don't lay on the floor. And I was a small, frail 12-year-old boy, so none of this is surprising. None of it. What's surprising is how people pretend that racism is not an issue. Like Martin Luther King wrote in his letters from a Birmingham jail, it is the white moderate that we need to speak up. I agree 100% with the senator said. It's not so much the KKK members out. We know who they are. It's the white moderate.
Right.
Mike, thank you so much.
Can I say something to that, just real quick, Brian? Because, look, I was born in Harlem. My mom came from Guyana. I literally my whole life have always been conscious of what I wear, how I speak, you know, how I communicate, my level of aggression or lack thereof. Brown University undergrad, Harvard Business School, New York State Senator. Brian, I can tell you to this moment, I am always conscious of the clothes I put on. I get nervous even when I think about putting on a hoodie in my own district. Why? Mm-hmm. Because I just don't want a possible situation to occur. Why should I have to live like that? Now, I'm used to it. It's fine. It doesn't particularly bother me, Brian. But what almost has forced me to even acknowledge to the caller's point is my own decisions that I make just to protect myself and my family from becoming a statistic. And the brother on the phone, he served in the military. You went and risked your life for all of us. You should not come back here and feel as if somehow your life's at risk because of your identity. So that's what really what this thing crystallized with this video. It was so stark, the contrast between him and her, and her privilege and her complete acknowledgement and acceptance and happily desire to enforce her privilege upon this man who acted in a way that I can't even imagine. We are so fortunate that he did not react in a hostile way, because then that would have become the entire conversation. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, why did he react right. like that? Well, she didn't. Right. Whereas even because of the way he reacted, Brian, we have been able to just look at the issue clean. And that I want to thank him for, because right. I don't know if I could have reacted that way if someone's calling 911 and lying on me to my face.
This incident and video were Monday, Memorial Day. George Floyd was killed on Monday, so poignantly, Memorial Day. And I'm thinking about these things that most of America, certainly most of white America, would not even believe, never mind think about a pattern, were they not caught on video in a number of instances. Right. So people have now seen this video. Yeah. People have seen the George Floyd video. People have seen the Ahmaud Arbery killing video. Mm-hmm. And yet I saw a stat. I've read so much this week, I don't even remember in what news organization. But it was a chart of the number of police-involved killings in America per year since Ferguson. And mm-hmm. the point being that since sort of the modern era of, and Eric Garner was that same summer, 2014. And so in what we might think of as the modern era of videos capturing incidents that reveal police behavior, and the advent of police wearing body cams as a policy response mm-hmm. to that. At the beginning of the period, there were about 1,100 police-involved killings across the country. That year, the next year, 1,100. The next year, 1,100. The next year, 1,100. Last year, 1,100. I think we thought that videos were going to make more of a difference than they've made.
Well, listen, I believe strongly, I have one of my colleagues, Senator Jamal Bailey, carries a bill that looks to repeal Section 58, which basically hides police misconduct and abuse records from the public. I believe this stuff has to come to light beforehand. If you look at the case of the gentleman who had his knee on the neck of George Floyd, when you look at his police records, apparently he had about 18 or more former police misconduct charges that were there. Now that wasn't in the public view, but it was in the view of the police department. So, to me, videos is one thing, but videos is the after effect. We need the forward planning. The forward planning is if there are, and we need transparency, right? If there are police who are engaging in bad behavior, and they have a lot of misconduct cases against them, the public should know that, and we could put the pressure on the right people to get people fired. Now, in the ideal world, the police themselves would sort of internalize this and say, listen, the worst thing to a great police officer is a bad one. So we should root out the bad ones ourselves to protect the integrity of police across the country. But mm-hmm. we've got to do something, because we have to hit these issues before they become the next video. And until we do that, we're going to have a hard time addressing this issue.
State Senator Brian Benjamin from Upper Manhattan, thank you so much for your time today. Let's keep talking.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.